Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actress Cheyenne Hernandez from the hit film The Tax Collector talks about what it takes to make it in Hollywood.
So I started down that path. I hated myself. I wasn't happy. I still wasn't getting signed. And so it was like, it was that moment of I can either, you know, try my hardest as myself or be miserable for the rest of my life trying to be someone I'm not and possibly still not even make it. I remember telling myself, like, one day you're gonna buy as many freaking jeans as you wanna buy. One day you're gonna throw the middle finger to all of these jeans, you know, like, it was, because it was just, it seemed so insignificant, but it was a big deal at the time.
Today on the show, actress Cheyenne Hernandez teaches us all how to never give up. Stay close.
Hi, my name is Cheyenne Hernandez, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I am so excited about the guest on the show today because she's a little bit extraordinary. Now, I usually have on comedians. Like last week, you may have listened to Wendy Liebman. By the way, if you haven't heard Wendy Liebman talk, it's a fascinating conversation about coincidences. Coincidences. And Cheyenne, you were just talking to me about a little bit about coincidences.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, so have you felt like you've had a lot of them in your life?
Oh, definitely. It's, I mean, deja vu happens constantly for me, so.
I think that's so fascinating. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I know as we get older, I see more of why what happened, or I see, you know, the fabric of our lives, you know, when you look back.
Yeah.
But also, if you become aware, you'll see them all the time, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to talk to you about your topic. You bring forth the topic, don't give up. And so Cheyenne and I are going to talk about not giving up, which is something I know a lot about. As most of my audience knows, I've been in LA for 23 years. And, you know, I've had some good years and some bad years. I've had good weeks and bad weeks and good months and bad months. And, you know, it's definitely a game of stick-to-itiveness. I know that. And since I've been out here so long, I'm not really sure if that's the way it is for everybody in the whole world or no matter what career you choose in terms of not giving up. In other words, like, okay, so let's say you want to be a doctor, right? You go to school, you take some tests, it's super hard, but you take more tests and you finally, you get through it and you will be a doctor, right, Cheyenne? Right.
Yep.
Okay. But as an actor or an actress, what?
Well, the thing is you never know. Also, I'm thinking back on the doctor one. Like I enlisted into the army to be a medic. That was my goal. I was going to be a combat medic. I was going to do it. I was going to be a career in the army. And then I got thrown across a military vehicle and lost the ability to feel my arm.
Okay, wait a second, Cheyenne. You're burying the lead. I mean, holy cow, you just said a lot. At what age did you see if you could become what age were you when you became an Army medic?
Well, I signed when I was 16 because that was right before I graduated. And then as soon as I graduated from high school, I turned 17 and left for the Army. So,
that's super interesting. Did your parents have to sign for you?
Oh, yeah. And they were not happy. I mean, there was a lot of begging and coaxing that went into that.
Wow.
I remember.
Because they were scared for you?
Yeah. And I mean, so I was the uh-oh kid when they were teenagers.
What's that mean?
Like, they didn't mean to have me. I was oops.
I get it.
Yeah. So it's like, so they had me so young that I feel like I grew up with them. And so even to this day, we have more of a brother-sister type relationship where my grandma, when I was a kid, kind of she took over a lot.
Wow.
And So by the time it was like, okay, well, now I'm going to join the military, my parents, they were like, wait, what? No. So it's like they didn't want to let me go. They didn't want to risk it. And
now, how old were they when they had you?
18 and 19.
Oh, my God. Oh, baby Jesus. That sounds horrific to be that age with a child.
Yeah.
I mean, that just seems...
To this day, did you know my dad's like my brother.
That was different? Wait, say that again?
My dad's like my brother. I mean, like, growing up, we used to run around the dollar store, you know, with those pool noodles and just beat the crap out of each other running around the store.
Sure.
And my grandpa would just be rolling his eyes. And then I remember one time this lady that was in the checkout, she said, oh my gosh, your kids look exactly alike. And my grandpa's like, well, you're half right. That's my son, but that's his kid.
Wow, that is amazing. You grew up in LA, right?
No, El Paso, Texas.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. El Paso, Texas. Mm-hmm. And so I can't wait to hear your story. Do you have brothers and sisters?
So right now I have three younger siblings. I have my brother Evan, who is 10, my sister Tatiana, who is about to be 9, and then my brother Julian, who is 7.
Oh my gosh, you have babies.
Well, my mom got remarried.
Your siblings. Mom. I know, but... Yeah, that's amazing.
She got remarried, and so she started having kids again when I was in high school. It was a shock at first, but I love them to death. And then I did have my two brothers, Isaiah and Joshua, who by blood, they're actually my cousins. But just the way we grew up, my mom's sister got pregnant with Isaiah at the same time as my mom was pregnant with me. So when they had us, it was like we were just raised as a litter. And so they were my brothers. And then they were unfortunately killed by a drunk driver in 2014. So
God, both of them.
Yeah, yeah. It was
Cheyenne.
It's literally the worst thing you can possibly imagine to go through. It's
God, Cheyenne, I'm so sorry.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Did that just what happened to your family? Is everybody okay? Like
we scattered. Yeah. I mean, in a situation like that, it's like I feel like I was kind of that stroppy teenager who always thought I was right, you know, and I really regret that now. And they were like the glue that held the family together, you know. So when they died, when they were killed, it was like, I mean, we had to scatter in order to survive. Like nobody, part of my family moved to San Antonio. My mom's moving to Kansas City. Like, this guy, he killed our whole family. Like that.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It was down, where was it, in Texas?
In El Paso. I was actually home on leave. My brother Isaiah, he was 2 weeks away from leaving for basic training. He was going to try to get stationed with me in Hawaii.
Oh.
And, yeah, he almost made it out. And that's what kills me, is that it's like, you know, you take that huge leap to, you know, serve your country, to do something amazing, to travel. He did that. He was brave enough to sign that piece of paper. He was brave enough to say, like, I want to go do something good. And then he's murdered by a drunk driver. You know, it's just like it's horrible and it's ridiculous. And, you know, I think that the whole, oh, it's funny and cool to drive drunk, it needs to stop because it's killing our youth. It really is. It's killing families. It's like, I don't think people realize, like, because it always happens to somebody that you know, but you never think it's going to happen to your family until you get that call. And it's like your brain has to wrap around that.
And how old were they at the time?
So Isaiah was 19 and Joshua was 24.
Babies. That is so young.
Yeah.
That is so young, and they were driving, they were together.
Mm-hmm. And Joshua's girlfriend, Shannon, was with them too. And she'd been in our family for years. Like, we had already adopted her into the, like, we had already accepted that they were going to graduate college, get married, have kids, you know, like that was
part of the family.
That was like, that was the future that we envisioned, you know? And so it's like,
did she also perish?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
That sounds like a horrific.
Too. It must have been at a very high speed or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous. And the fact that it happened on Christmas Eve, like, it was on the news. This guy, he fought us for years saying, oh, I didn't do it. He had no remorse. I think that was the hardest thing, is to have to look at this guy in the face and have him look back with such disgust, such, like, I didn't do it. I'm not going to admit guilt. I just want to be free. I mean, it's just like, if I killed somebody's kids, I would be like, lock me up forever. Right. I don't deserve to be out. Right. Like,
I agree. I totally agree. I'm so sorry you've had to carry this huge burden. It's fascinating to me what people have to go through. Now, I didn't even mention to the audience, but you are in this new movie this summer, The Tax Collector. It just came out now in 2020. You guys can get it on Amazon Prime or on Apple TV. And Cheyenne, you play like the most gorgeous, kick-ass woman in this suit, and you just look phenomenal. And it's just the fact that here you are, you're in this new blockbuster movie, and then you carry this pain. I don't think people realize that actors and actresses and people that are on stage are like real people, and real shit happens to them.
I think that in a way it's funny, because I thought that I was going to be like kind of like the odd one out, you know. It's like, because I have such a crazy past, and then so I've always felt like I wasn't going to fit in. I've never really fit in anywhere. So I thought this was going to be something else that just separated me. But I'm finding the more that I'm in this industry that it's the people that are in pain, the people that have really gone through stuff, they're the ones that are in front of that camera. Like, I mean, working with Shia LaBeouf, we had to do this exercise where we had to literally just stare into each other's eyes for 7 minutes. And you can't say anything. And so Shia and
I... Wait a minute. Now, this wasn't 7 minutes in heaven, was it?
No.
You weren't in a closet alone, like, with a flashlight.
No, Shia's amazing, okay. But he's like a brother.
That's so sweet.
But so we had to... So Shia, it was funny, we went to rehearsal, and Shia was saying, oh, there's this exercise where you have to stare at each other for 7 minutes, but I can't get someone to do it with me. And so all of us were like, well, yeah, because it's weird. Why would you want to do that? And we were all laughing. And then David overheard when he came in, and he's like, Shia, sit. And we're like, oh.
Now that's the director, right? You're talking about the director?
Yes.
What's his name again? David Adler?
David Ayer.
Air, right. Yeah. So he made that an exercise you guys had to do.
Yeah, so he goes, Shia, sit. And so we're like, oh. So we go and we sit. And he's like, 7 minutes, go. And so it's crazy. It really is crazy. So we started, and it's like when you first start staring into someone's eyes, of course all the BS comes up. So we were like fighting laughter. And David's like, no laughing. And so we're like,
yeah, and then it gets harder not to laugh.
Yeah, just staring at each other. And then it was, like, so bizarre, because now I see why people say that the eyes are the window to the soul. Because all of a sudden, all the BS dropped, and both of us, our eyes were watering. It was like, I just wanted to reach out and hug him, because it was like, I saw his pain and he saw my pain, and it was just that, like, we recognized, our souls, like, recognized each other. It was just crazy. And it was like, I just remember thinking, like, I love you. I love you so much. Like, I just want to heal you. I want to wrap my arms around you and just heal you. And he said the same thing. He's like, when we stopped, David was like, what did you guys see? And and Shia was just like, she's just a good person. He's like, I felt the love coming out of her. And I was like, whoa, because I was thinking how much I love him, you know? And
oh my gosh, that's
so
funny.
It was so crazy.
Don't most acting exercises end up with like a shoulder massage or like, you know, there always ends up to be touching and kind of like an intimacy thing when you're an actress, right?
Yeah, and that helped a lot, because I still am like this, but I'm better. I did not like to be touched at all. Like, if somebody came and put their hand on my shoulder, I was like this. And David saw that throughout rehearsal. And so David, like, he kept having me do different exercises that explored that, that like whether it was hugging someone or Bobby Soto would, he knew that I hated touch, but he also knew that I was trying to get over it. So he would show up to rehearsal and hug me, and I would kind of like do this, and he's like, love me back. So like I had to hug him.
That sounds like a blast. What a great shooting experience. Yeah. But How long did it take to shoot the film?
A couple months. Honestly, most of the time went into prep. So all the rehearsal, I mean, we had to go train in MMA, so we were at the dojo all the time. So it was just like a lot of prep work.
So when you're working out like that, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about. When you're working out like that, do you have to cut weight? And like, what are the goals?
See, it depends on what role you're playing. For me, I had just gotten out of the Army. It's funny, like, it wasn't, and this is part of when I was saying, like, don't give up. It's like, so I got out of the Army, and I went to my first agency over in Hawaii, and the guy was like, I guess you could play the athletic role. I don't really know where we would put you. And he's like, you know, I don't know if this is going to work. And so I was so self-conscious, I wound up dropping weight, like, changing my body. I went into full-blown panic mode where I was like, if I want to make it, I have to change everything about myself. And so I started down that path. I hated myself. I wasn't happy. I still wasn't getting signed. And so it was like, it was that moment of I can either, you know, try my hardest as myself or be miserable for the rest of my life trying to be someone I'm not and possibly still not even make it. So then it was, you know what, dropping everything, I'm just going to be myself again. And when I decided to do that, going into the movie was a lot better because it was more of, they told me the character that I was going to play, and they kind of said, how do you want her to look? And so it's like, I didn't want her to be super skinny, like, and I'm not super skinny. I'm somewhere in between. But I was like, I want her to be strong. I want her to be tough. I want her to be a force to be reckoned with. And so it was a lot of getting toned. It was a lot of how do I build up my muscles so that if I hold someone by the throat, you can see the, you know.
Wow. Yeah. It's so specific. And so did you have a trainer, obviously?
Oh, my sensei, Alexander Richard Mosqueda. I mean, I couldn't have asked for someone better because it was like, you know, like, okay, like I told you, I pretty much grew up with my parents. They were, I mean, they're like my best friends. They're like my siblings, and I love them to death, and we have an amazing relationship today. Growing up, I did have my challenges. And so when I was at the dojo, I remember I was kind of the quiet one in the corner for a while. I usually am. Like, I'm usually quiet when people first meet me. And so I was really quiet, and then I was working on this move, and I really poured myself into MMA. I still do MMA. I'm absolutely in love with it.
When you say mixed martial arts like that, are you talking about, give me the three. It's like judo, karate, and...
Well, ours, it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, American kempo, and Russian boxing. That's what we study.
And wow, I had no idea there was a different kind of boxing than boxing.
Yeah, it hurts. But so sensei, it was like, you know, I would show up, and I mean, he was like my therapist. He always knew what was, if something was wrong. And so it was like, what do you need today? How are you? And then I'd be like, oh, I'm good. And he's like, no, how are you really? And he just very quickly became one of my best friends in the world, like a father figure. And it got to the point where it was like, I remember I did this move that I had been really, really, really working on and I could not perfect. It was one of the grappling moves. And I finally got it and I stood up and I'm a dork. So I'm like, yeah, you know, like freaking out. And sensei comes up and he picks me up and squeezes me and says, I'm so proud of you, kid. And I just had to go outside and cry because I was like, you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, I want to cry right now. Like, it was like a very special moment. And so it's like, I love to make my sensei proud. Like, I really do.
Okay, so let me ask you, I just, like, when you say sensei, this is a person who's like a coach or a judge. Is he an old man? Is he Japanese? What is it? What is it?
He's in his 50s, and it's just like, again, it's with the soul connection, you know? I feel like he was like a guardian angel in a time when I really, really needed a guardian angel. And it was to the point where, I mean, I have my demons, you know, I do. And I hadn't quite fought them yet when I first started doing tax collector. So I had a lot of issues. I was dealing with, you know, when I was in the military, they had me on a lot of very heavy meds when my brothers died. And so I kept going and I was like, look, I'm not crazy. I'm just sad. Like, I don't want to be on all of these. And they're like, oh, sorry, we're not taking you off. And so they have to give you certain pills to get off of Lexapro and Topamax and stuff. And they wouldn't prescribe them to me. So I quit cold turkey, which can kill you.
Yeah.
And so I stopped taking everything, but it threw my head into this weird, like, fog. And so I would be like a zombie for a while. And then all of a sudden I would be erratic. And I could not get a hold on it. And so I would show up to the dojo at some stupid hour, midnight, 1 a.m, and he was always there. And I remember one time I showed up and I was just like, I had had a really crazy day at rehearsal that day. David finally had broke the dam on me. For a while, it was like I was proud of having no emotion for some reason. I mean, I think a lot of us think that that's what strength is, you know, if you don't cry, you don't show emotion, you're the person everyone leans on. Like, for me, that was strength, and I was proud of it. David Ayer and Shia, you know, they really helped me realize that that's not strength, that I needed to feel, I needed to let go, I needed to grieve. And so on this particular day, at rehearsal, David pretty much broke me. Like, I mean, I had to pull over on the side of the road and I called David and I was like, I can't stop crying. Like, it was really, really bad. And he's like, don't drive, just come back. And then later on that day, I think it was that day that I went back to the dojo at like midnight and I was called sensei and I was like, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. I'm not okay. And he let me into the dojo and he just like made this palette on the floor. He put something on the TV and he just like laid, somebody could have fit in between us. Like, he never tried to take advantage, never. I mean, he was just there. And I don't know, that was what I needed. You know, I needed someone to just say, I love you.
Yeah, I know, it's beautiful and everything. I just can't get my head around, like, this is all. And we're going to get your story in a second here, the official story. But I just try to get some background because we're talking about that movie, The Tax Collector, which was a big hit this summer. But what I'm trying to understand is you're getting all this wisdom and all this is going on and you're working on a movie set and you're getting paid, or it's at least pre-production time.
Yeah.
And where it was all in Hawaii.
No, this is in L.A.
Oh, so you're shooting in L.A.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you live here before then or...
I was homeless there.
You were homeless there. Yeah, I'm anxious. No, that's not funny. I'm anxious. I can't wait to hear about this. And now you're in Melbourne, Australia.
Yes.
And how long are you going to be there?
Just until stuff slows down with the whole COVID situation.
Yeah. Do you have friends there or who's there?
Oh, yeah, my partner's here. We live half in L.A. Perfect. So it was just when COVID hit, this is where we were.
So your experience on The Tax Collector, how, you said a couple of months pre-production, and then when you're actually shooting, it's like, what, 40 days? And then you're done, essentially, until it comes around to doing press, right?
Yeah.
So how many months, though? Because I can't get over this, like, it's exciting. They got you in great shape, and you got into, like, a great mental place, and your spirit got... so much better. This is like such an education, and you're getting paid. You're like the
crash
star
course
of a film.
On acting, crash course on Hollywood, crash course on mental health. I mean,
that's what I mean. It's fantastic.
Different person than
I can't believe it. This is like, this alone is like an amazing story. Just how you got to that role, and then all of a sudden, even more doors opened. in terms of, you know, you had these breakthroughs and these epiphanies.
Yeah, I learned how to love. I really did. Like, I learned how to love people and let people love me through this gruesome crime thriller, you know?
I know, but it's just fascinating. And you are so beautiful in the film, man. I'm telling you. So gorgeous. You are such a gorgeous superhero. I mean, not superhero, but you're a villain. You're a villain. And you've got like this tiny waist and then this crazy costume and your hair and makeup. I mean, you just look great.
Thanks.
Yeah, it must have been a lot of fun getting all dressed up like that. Or, you know, obviously getting into the hair and makeup and the wardrobe.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
How long did it take? In the morning?
For the hair and makeup, not too long. It was more of like my shenanigans on in hair and makeup that made it take longer. Like I was constantly dancing or something dumb that poor Christina was like
trying to do makeup on you with her hand waving in the air. Well, I'm really excited to hear the story, not giving up. But before we hear your story, Cheyenne, I did want to remind everybody that the Storyworthy Hour of Power is going really well. Every Sunday night, you guys, we're gathering on Zoom at 6 p.m. and it's Pacific time, L.A. time. So, like, what time is that for you? 6 p.m. here is what time in Australia?
7 a.m. in Australia.
Oh, okay. Well, Cheyenne, I have no problem then. I'm sure you won't mind at all getting up in the morning and doing the Storyworthy Hour of Power. Yes, get your coffee and come on over. It's been so much fun. We're on our 17th show now, and it's really going great. Myself and four other storytellers tell a true story, and we've just such talented people. It's going so well. And then we play Story Smash, the storytelling game show, with Blaine Kupach and Danny Zucker. Wendy Liebman's been on, and Mark DiCarlo and Phil Hendry. And anyway, it's going great. So head over to storyworthypodcast.com and you're going to find out all the information you need to join me on the Storyworthy Hour of Power. It's a blast, you guys. I got you guys totally covered during this pandemic with entertainment on Sunday nights. How about that? All right, you guys, she's here right now. You've heard her talking, Cheyenne Ray Hernandez. She is an actress who's been on numerous television programs, including Hawaii Five-0. Hey, Cheyenne, when you were on Hawaii Five-0, was it in Hawaii or were you in LA?
Yeah.
You were in Hawaii?
Yeah, I was stationed there when I was...
Oh, so that was nice.
Oh, that was... Oh, my God, Hawaii.
So they can kind of hire you as a local then if you were already living there?
Yeah, it was funny because they assumed I was Hawaiian. And I just, like, never corrected. I didn't, like, it wasn't intentional. I just, like, I didn't know at first, and then I got there on set, and then people thought I was Hawaiian, and I was like, oh. At that point, you don't want to make people feel awkward.
Yeah, say, sure, go with that. Yeah, we'll go with that. That's fine. American is American. And anyway, now you're starring in the film The Tax Collector, like we were talking about. It's on Amazon Prime and on Apple TV right now. You guys can find Cheyenne over on Instagram. That seems to be where you have a lot of stuff going on, Cheyenne, yeah?
Yeah, Instagram.
And it's Cheyenne _ Hernandez, yes?
It's Cheyenne Ray _ Hernandez.
That's right. It's Cheyenne Ray _ Hernandez. Mm-hmm. R-A-E is your middle name. Do you go by that? Do people say like Cheyenne Ray?
Sometimes, like, if somebody, I've noticed it's more of when I'm doing something crazy, like Cheyenne Ray, you know?
Yeah. That's so funny, on that movie you were just working on, that it would be Shy and Shy. That's totally crazy. Shia LaBeouf and you, Shy.
Yeah, because people call me Shy, so it's,
super funny. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you guys, wherever you are, please put your hands together for Cheyenne Ray Hernandez.
Thank you. Today I did want to talk about not giving up because there's certain parts of my journey I've had these moments of just, what do I do? Do I keep going or do I call it? And a lot of those moments happened when I was living out of a car in LA, or when I was staying at someone's house and having to step outside due to crazy situations there and go, oh my God, what am I doing here? And so there was a lot of times where I was just like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And throughout these times, there was tiny little beacons of hope that I feel like I kept just saying, okay, well, that's a good sign. All right, well, that's a good sign. And now I realize that those were the things showing me that I was on the right path. And so just pay attention to little signs that tell you, keep going. I remember when I was doing tax collector, it's funny because now I get a lot, I get asked a lot, oh, did you get to keep that awesome black costume? The one that,
the one on the poster.
Yeah, the one on the posters and stuff. And so I'm always like, oh, I wish. And it's funny because my mind travels back in time to when I was able to pick out which outfit I wanted to keep from the movie. And they said, you can keep and pick one outfit. And so I had my eye on that black dress. I loved it. I miss it. And then I looked at that outfit that I kidnapped the kids in, and it's jeans and a jacket and a top. And I remember at the time I had lost some weight before the movie, going to the dojo and stuff. So I didn't have any jeans that fit me. My clothes were like really baggy and stuff. And so I was like, okay, I really want that dress, but I have to pick the jeans because I don't have jeans. And it's just crazy because it's like now all of a sudden the movie's up there. I can buy jeans if I want to buy jeans. And but it's just like in that moment, I remember something so small being such a big, like, I remember telling myself, like, one day you're going to buy as many freaking jeans as you want to buy. One day you're going to throw the middle finger to all of these jeans, you know, like it seemed so insignificant, but it was a big deal at the time. But yeah, so it's like, even when it just seems tough and it seems like crap, I really can't even buy jeans right now. Like that's like, I can't do anything. I'm living off of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in my car. Even when I was on set, I would pretend to take back food for people that were still on set and stuff, and then just take it home so I could have dinner. Like, it was like, I mean,
Well, tell us how you got to live in your car in L.A. What is all that about? Like, back up.
So it was a journey. Like, I as soon as I retired from the military, I went to Washington thinking that Seattle was going to be like a mini L.A., but it wasn't. And it was kind of that moment of, what's my decision? Am I going to go for it? Am I going to do this?
Wait, did you think Seattle had television work or film work?
I thought that I would be able to at least get a small start there. The people that I was meeting weren't who I thought.
If anybody said, name me four cities that are like entertainment related or like film and theater or television, I wouldn't even think of Seattle till like the 20th. I mean, why? What made you think that Seattle had anything going on?
I had heard that people had gotten their start, like small starts there. I had heard there was a lot of small productions there. I didn't mind if it was indie films or anything like that. I just wanted to get started.
Yeah.
But I wasn't quite ready for LA, I don't think. I was intimidated.
Only like 22. You were very young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had no experience really, so it was scary. And then when I realized it wasn't, it was from one day to the next where I just sat there and asked myself, what are you doing? All right, you want to make this happen? You want to keep your? I promised my brother Isaiah. I put my hand on his casket and I said, I'm gonna do it for both of us, and because he wanted to act too. And so it was just kind of that moment of, what are you doing? And I chose to pack up my cat and go to LA. And so my grandma drove with my cat. My grandma drove with me, and we had an amazing road trip driving my cat to her house. And then we had that tearful goodbye of, I don't know when I'm going to be back. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have a home. I don't have anything, but I'm driving to LA by myself.
So wait a second. Where was she at?
In El Paso.
So, but how, she came up to Seattle and drove with you.
Yeah, she flew up to Seattle. I took her on a few adventures, and then her and I drove from there to El Paso, Texas. And it's still our favorite road trip ever.
Wait a minute. Why did you? I thought you came to LA. Why did you go all the way to El Paso?
Because I had my cat, and I didn't. He's my, like, it's funny. I've had him illegally since the Army. Like, you're not supposed to have cats in the barracks, but I had a cat in my barracks because I was on 24-hour duty, and I saw a bunch of people laughing around a dumpster, and I had this weird feeling. You know, you just get a bad feeling sometimes, and I walked over, and I flashed the light, and they took off running, so I was like, oh, these idiots, like, they're doing something wrong. So I went over there and they were throwing a cat in the dumpster. And so he had this big bump on his head and he couldn't step with one of his paws. So I took him into the barracks thinking, oh, I'm going to clean him up, take him to the vet and find a home for him. Well, I found his home. It's with me. And so when, it's funny, when I retired from the military, the first thing I did was I went up to our first sergeant and called him by his first name just to irritate him because I'd always wanted to because now I was a civilian and I could. And so I was like, what's up, Lenny? And he's like, oh my God. And then I was like, by the way, I had a cat illegally in the barracks for like a whole year.
And oh my gosh. How did the cat never left the barracks?
Well, he did for inspections. I used to pack him up for inspections and take him to a friend's house and then bring him back.
Oh my gosh. Wait, did you have the litter box then in the barracks?
Yeah.
You had to?
Yeah.
And where'd you get the cat food?
I just bought cat food and hid it in bags when I went upstairs.
You are so funny. No, I just rescued a kitten a couple of weeks ago. So I'm all about the cats, right? You know, I love kittens.
I'm
I love
up to
cats.
Four.
Oh my gosh. You're becoming a cat lady.
Oh, proudly.
You have four cats in Melbourne.
Right now they're in LA. My, one of my best friends, Celeste, she's, thank God she's, they're her god cats, Cece. So she...
She's caring for them.
Yeah.
So then you get to LA, you have no home, and your plan is what? What's the plan?
Just to be around the industry. I think that my first thing was I just wanted to see if it was even something that I really wanted to do. I knew I loved to act. I knew that I wanted to act, but I had heard so much drama about this industry, and I didn't want to be a part of that. And so I went and I did this acting program. And then I went up to the person who owns it and I said, "Can I have 3 minutes of your time?" And he was like, "Sure." And so I just said, "Look, I just want to follow you around. You don't have to pay me. Just let me bring you guys coffee or anything you guys need and let me just see how you guys conduct yourselves in front of other professionals in this industry." And he's like, "Okay, yeah, you can intern." And so I started interning.
And where is this again? What acting school?
It's called Celebrity Experience. And it's not an acting school. It's a program where they have, it's like they have celebrities teaching kids and young adults, whether it's how to do a monologue, commercial, improv. And so they get to learn from people that are already in the industry and ask them questions and stuff.
Is it a Scientology thing?
No.
Okay, I was just curious because they do stuff like that.
Oh, really? No.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
I accidentally, that's a story for another time maybe, but I accidentally signed a lot of Scientology stuff by accident because I wanted free things.
Cheyenne, this is no good. See, sometimes
I didn't know it was them.
Sometimes you're a big, brave girl and with guns, and other times you are just like a naive child from Texas.
I didn't know. You don't tell. Yeah, you know, you don't tell a Mexican, you know, free. Because I'm like, what? Okay.
So, what was Scientology offering? Because they do offer a lot of acting classes, don't they?
Yeah. I don't know about that. It was actually this acting program that I was interning for. I mean, I still hang out with them. I think they're all of them are amazing people.
Awesome.
They were doing this gala thing, and I couldn't afford, obviously, to do the gala. It was really expensive. So, and then one of the parents of the students at the program, she wasn't going to go to the gala either. So her and I, she's from Hawaii, and so... we had that aloha moment where, oh my God,
sure.
Hawaii. And we said aloha to each other and that was it. All of a sudden we were ohana. And so her and I went and we were exploring Hollywood Boulevard and stuff. And there was this guy standing outside and there was a language barrier. He was trying to explain things to people, but they were flipping him off, telling him to go to hell and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, these people are being really mean to this guy. So I went up and I was like, I just wanted to be nice. I was like, hey, I saw there was some issues. What's going on? What are you trying to say? And he's like, oh, well, if there's anything that you want to change about your personality, we can help you. We have books and pamphlets and stickers.
You're right.
And so, So he said there was free things in this place. And so me and my friend kind of, we kind of looked at each other and we're like, all right, let's go. And we went in. So you start flipping through this questionnaire that they give you. And first you have to fill out your information, your email, you know, all kinds of stuff. And so, yeah, I'm filling this stuff out. And the questions start to get weird. Like,
oh, God.
They were like, do you take pleasure in harming small animals? Like, just, I mean, I was like, what? Yeah. And then she goes, so then Shekinah goes, Shai, there's snakes on the wall. And I was like, what do you mean? And I look up and there's snakes on the wall. And there's triangles everywhere. And Dante's Inferno painted over there. And I'm like, where are we? So we flip to the end of the questionnaire and it says Church of Scientology. And I was completely ignorant. I had no idea what, but I was like, this just doesn't sound good. And she's like, oh my God. So she's a pastor's daughter.
Wow.
And so she's like, oh my God. And she's like, and we didn't even pray for the hot dogs we just ate. So she starts loudly praying to God in the middle of a Scientology building. And then so we get up and we're like, okay, we got to go. And they're like, no, just sit down and finish the questionnaire. These guys stand up and we're like, oh my God. And so, yeah, they're like, just finish the questionnaire, just sit down and finish the questionnaire. So we just start running, and we probably ran for a good block, and then until we walked around the corner and just started laughing. But, yeah, I got emails for a while.
That, well, see, that's exactly how they operate. They pick the person who's fish out of water, and they bring you in, they're your friend, and we care so much about you and your personality, and we can help you, and you can be an actress.
But Christine, they gave me free stickers, so.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I'm going to give you stickers. I've got new swag. It's coming your way, Cheyenne. You're worth it.
I love it.
So, okay, we're going to wrap this up, but now, you know, you have done this huge movie. Now, this isn't the end, though. This is just one project along the way, right?
Yep.
And so now do you have people helping you, working for you? I mean, because obviously this is such a beautiful, you know, picture of you. I mean, in terms of a real, this whole movie that you just did, it must be a tremendous, like a doorway, I would think, to open you up to other acting possibilities.
Well, it's cool, actually, because so I came into this and I only had my manager, really. And so now that Tax Collector's out, we're getting interest from different agencies because I don't even have an agency yet. So,
wow. Yeah.
So it's it's really interesting to be able to have my work out there now so people can understand what it is they're getting themselves into. Like, you know, before, I feel like when I went to LA, I was just really new. They had no idea who I was, what I could do, who's this newbie. There's new people every day. But now at least they can see examples of what I can do. So
exactly. Do you think you'll probably try to stay in that genre? In other words, when you're just now, like keeping in shape, and because you look great, but I mean, are you going to try to stay in that? I don't know. You say femme fatale, or you say villain? I'm not sure. Like, but in a villainous role.
I want to do it all. Really, like I feel like that's my favorite one is the tough girl. Like, it's just, I'm comfortable around weapons. I'm comfortable fighting, falling.
Yeah, your military background just gives you such a leg up. It's really exciting.
Like, that's what I want to do. I mean, I'm really addicted to action films now. I really want to be in more action films. I was really bummed when I saw that they redid Tomb Raider because I would have loved to audition for that. But she killed it. So I'm like, okay, I'm not mad at you. You were really good.
Wait, who killed it? Who killed it?
I can't remember her name, but the girl that they remade Tomb Raider.
They chose, yeah. And she she didn't want it. She didn't want it out there.
That what?
Did she didn't want it out there, or how'd she kill it? What do you mean?
Oh no, she did really well.
Like, she killed it. Like she did great. She killed the project.
Yeah, I would have loved to audition for that.
I'm thinking, who has that power? Now, that's what I mean, though. That's why I'm saying, Cheyenne, you should right now, in my opinion, like I know anything. No, but then shoehorn yourself in and just be that girl now, like Angelina Jolie. Or, you know, there's plenty of other actresses who've had that role, but then they can only hold on to it for so long. So now it's your time, Cheyenne.
Oh, I want to be that. I want to be that person. Like, I've been training in stunts. I love it. When I get back to LA, one of the people that I've been working with, training with stunts, he promised to light me on fire, which I'm really looking forward to.
You are so funny. You want to be in that big suit, that big fire suit?
No. They coat you in this like jelly stuff, and they literally light you on fire.
Oh no!
I got to light him on fire, and then put him out. And
okay, what kind of lighter? Did you use a lighter or like a big matchstick? Would you use?
No, they had this little. It was like a special little thing that they clicked in it.
Oh yeah, like ignited.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so wild. And then what? Then you grab a Halon fire extinguisher and put them out.
Yeah, so they have to put you out, like, with the fire extinguisher. I want to do it so bad.
Oh, my gosh. Cheyenne.
We also discussed dropping me from high places and teaching me how to fall. So I'm really looking forward to that, even though I'm not supposed to hit my head anymore because I got a traumatic brain injury and I could die. You know, there's that. But
wait, you had a traumatic brain injury?
Yeah, when I in the military, I flew across the LMTV, and I can't feel these two or any of this. I had a traumatic brain injury. I had blood coming out of like my eye.
So
wait a second. My ears, my nose, my eyes, not my eyes.
Wow, I'm not sure I understand that. You had a what?
Traumatic brain injury. So
I know, but how? You were what? Flying what?
So I was the medic in the back of an LMTV on a pre-deployment to we were in the Mojave Desert. And we got a call at like 3 a.m. about MassCal. So it's like a bunch of casualties at once. And so I was supposed to be the medic in a different vehicle. So the guy that was before me in this vehicle didn't strap anything down in the back of the LMTV. It's like the really, really big military vehicle that carries all of the soldiers and or equipment.
How many people fit in that?
God, maybe like... 40.
Wow. Okay. A big vehicle. LMTV.
Oh yeah. It's huge. Humongous.
Interesting.
And so he didn't strap anything down. So I remember hitting a bump and I remember letting go of the little pole thing and doing that. And then I woke up and I had blood like all over my face.
Oh my God.
My ears and stuff. And it was kind of like my memory is like choppy of that night, but I woke up again the next morning and everyone was kind of like really weird with me and people were calling me Doc and I didn't get it because you have to earn the title of Doc. People don't just call you Doc. And so I was like, why are people calling me Doc? Because I hadn't yet
been
called Doc.
Yeah.
And so they said that apparently I came out of the LMTV, saw the blood and First Sergeant was like, take her back to the aid station, treat her. And apparently I cussed him out and said to Charlie Mike, which is continue mission, and I called him a couple of names. I don't remember this at all. Like, at all. I have no recollection of this. And then they said that I just kind of, like, kept, like, wiping the blood, and I put something there, and I wanted to keep treating people. And so that's why some people started calling me Doc, because they're like, oh, that was cool of her.
But wait, what happened in the accident? What happened?
We just hit a bump, and one of the chests flew up. Well, it wasn't even just one because everything in there was in a disarray. So when it flew up, I guess it hit me and I...
Oh, God. That is so upsetting. Were you off for a period of time?
No, because I had a traumatic brain injury. It was crazy because I had memorized the tests that you give to people who you're testing for a traumatic brain injury. So as a medic who gives those tests, I remember thinking when they were about to do that test to me, I'm thinking like, okay, well, I already memorized this. It's fine. And then I was fine, and they started saying, say your months backwards. And I was like, okay. And I said December, and nothing was coming to my head. I remember I remember freaking out, though, at that moment. They said I had a traumatic brain injury.
Wow. So you couldn't think, okay.
It was
October,
crazy.
November, December, December, November, October.
I remember panicking, and then I think that made it worse.
That's really upsetting. That would be so upsetting. Like, in other words, count down from 100 and you can't, or something like that's really obvious.
Remember the little snippets. That's what I remember.
Is that like the same test like Donald Trump took when he said, woman, man, person, TV, camera?
I don't know.
Was Trump around? And we got to wrap this up. But was Trump around when you were in the military?
Yes. Yeah.
What did people think in the military where you were?
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, this is why I did love to be in the military, because everybody had different opinions, but nobody hated each other for having different opinions, you know? So it's like, you knew the guys who were Republican, you knew the guys who were Democrats, and it was just like, everyone was okay with each other, you know? If somebody
Yeah, it's like you were mature adults. Like, who knew?
Yeah. So it was like, and we even joked with each other about each other's political views, you know, like, oh, there's your boy on TV right now, you know, and
exactly,
it was like,
yeah.
And so it was like, it was a lot better than I know. I noticed that in certain ways, there was a lot of like gossip and stuff in the military, and it was like high school, and you're like, how old are you? Mm-hmm. But then in certain ways, too, it's like, you know, there wasn't really racism. There wasn't really,
it was an easier time.
Political issues, yeah.
This is going to be over, and we can all stop thinking about politics. Because I got to tell you, I'm not interested. And for some reason, I've had to be, as everybody's had to be, unless our democracy goes under.
It's like you over there. It's like you knew who the racists were. You knew who the bigots were, and they were almost singled out. You know, so I did love my unit for that. The thing is that there was issues with females. So like females just still weren't like they were better about race than they were about females being in the military.
Yeah.
So that was hard. I think that was harder than all that.
You were in for 4 years.
Yeah, just shy of my 4 years. Yeah.
I think that's fabulous, Cheyenne. And I think that's going to make you really go far in Los Angeles as well in terms of Hollywood and films and stuff, because you obviously have like an integrity and like confidence and security that you're not going to make a lot of the mistakes other young actresses would do and do make all the time because they're so fresh. I mean, you're mm-hmm. fresh, but you're not intelligent. You know what I mean? I think you're going to do just fine.
I think what it is that I've lived, like, I know I'm only 25, but I've lived, like, a million different lives at this point. So I have noticed that it's, like, when it comes down to certain exercises and people have to imagine something really bad that's happened to them, it's, like, for me, I'm, like, shit, which one, I'm sorry, crap, which one do I choose, you know, like, which bad experience do I choose, or... You know, there's moments where I've had to be brave. There's moments where I've been crushed, you know, and it's like I have a lot to choose from because I've lived a lot.
Yeah, I think that's a huge plus in your corner for sure, because you have an awareness of life and death and camaraderie and foreign lands. And it's an exciting beginning for an actress, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that the big thing that I had to fight at first, that sometimes I still fight, but I think I've mostly gotten over it, is the fact that not everyone's going to like you.
Yeah.
I do have this thing about me where it's like, I'm like, why don't you like me? Please like me. How can I make you like me?
It's so hard. And that's not just you. A lot of women seems like women specifically feel that. It's really unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to get more and more confident. It just mm-hmm. takes time.
But that's the thing, too, is that, like that, again, that was something that the Army helped me with. I wanted everyone to like me and respect me at first. And I was so excited to be in the Army. I wanted to be one of the first females to do certain things. And then I remember I had trained forever. I finally got sent on this mission in the Mojave Desert. It was, again, during the pre-deployment. And they hadn't yet attached a female to this certain company. And I was so excited to be that female. So we rucked out there, my platoon sergeant and I, and he went to go be my battle buddy to drop me off. So we get there, and I was playing it cool, and then all of a sudden they're like, what the F is that? I don't want an effing female. Get her out of here. And I just like, I remember, like, so
my platoon sergeant. You'd be in shock. Yeah, you'd be in shock. Yeah, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, and my platoon sergeant, he was like, oh, okay, Roger, no problem. And he's like, I have to stay here. You can head back. And so I walked that whole way and just, because now no one was around me. So I just cried. Like, I just cried that whole ruck back.
Why do they call it a ruck?
Ruck. You have the rucksack.
I see.
So it's like you're not just walking just your person.
You're not just hiking.
50 pounds.
Right.
Yeah, you're carrying like 50 pounds.
Wow.
So I was just rucking back and I was so upset. And like I kept getting people either hitting on me or being mean to me. It was one or the other. And so it was like, it was that wake up call of, okay, not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to be okay with you. And I don't know, that was when I learned that lesson. And then it was like, I noticed that the different females had different nicknames. And so I wanted to be the one to choose my nickname. So it was then that I decided that I was going to be the cold one. I was going to be known as the bitchy medic. And so it was, I never went out.
That doesn't make any sense.
I never went out and hung out with people. I never went out, never hung out with people. Didn't really have too many friends. Like I cut myself off completely because I was like, you know what? I would rather be known as the professional, but the bitch than what I'm seeing a lot of these other females, unfortunately, get nicknamed for just being nice.
That's a good lesson. Yeah. I'm mumbling. I have a daughter, she's 13, and I'm trying so hard to keep her empowered. You know, trying so hard to just say no thank you. Just say no thank you. You don't owe anybody anything. You know, if somebody says, do you want to come over and play or whatever, just say no thank you. Just say no thank you. Like that, for some reason, that was so hard for me to do. I know. Isn't that funny, though? She shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, it sucks. I remember this one time, this guy came into the aid station. I was, like, still pretty new. And he walked in, and he like, gave me one look, and he's like, I want a male medic. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, can I know the issue so I can see if I can find you a male medic? And he's like, I just don't want an effing female. And he's like, I just want a male. And that's when I realized, I was like, okay, there's nobody even in the aid station anyways right now but me. So I was like, you know what? Then limp the F out of my aid station. Go ahead. And he's like, what? And he's like, but my ankle hurts. And I was like, then you can get seen by me. I was like, I'm the only one in the aid station. If not, you can limp the F out. Thank you. And it was funny because this same guy, okay, he left. He got into a really bad accident later on. One of the other medics messed up his treatment and I had to step in. During this treatment, he actually apologized to me and he was like, you know what? He's like, I was pretty ignorant. He's like, I'm sorry. And I was like, what?
Wow. You know? Amazing. I'm so
and
glad.
So after that, every single time he came to the aid station, he's like, where's Hernandez? And literally, he would ask for me every time we get in the aid station.
That's hilarious. Okay, two more questions. We gotta wrap it up. How long were you homeless in LA?
It was about maybe like four months and some change, I think.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I couch surfed here and there, but it was just like it was around people that I knew I shouldn't be around. You know, not good people that they're like, oh yeah, you can stay on the couch. And then all of a sudden they're doing sketchy things in the house and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, where am I? What am I doing? Who are these people? And so it was that, or if it wasn't that, then I was living in the car and I was sleeping in the parking lot of Universal Studios, showering at the gym. Like, it was just like a constant feeling of not being safe. You don't have a home. You don't have anything to your name.
It just takes so much bravery to do that in terms of like those factors, not in terms of where am I going to go to the bathroom or go, you know, where am I going to shower, but the safety, especially as a woman. Now you can take care of yourself, thank goodness, but I hope that will never happen again to you.
It won't. Good. And that's the thing is that when I was going through it, I just keep telling myself, you know, it could be worse. Like, there's people that have it so freaking bad, and it's not even just temporary. They had, like, that's their life. And, you know, thank God that my grandma constantly reminded me, if it doesn't work out, come home. If it doesn't work out, come back to El Paso. But for me, it was like, I don't want to, you know? I need to make this work. It has to work.
Well, that's the most successful people who just don't take no for an answer, and you can't talk them out of it. Those are the people that end up climbing because there it's mm-hmm. a stick-to-itiveness thing. But you hit the jackpot pretty early, all in all. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was a lot of, like we talked, like you said earlier, coincidences too, though.
Yeah.
Like, it was such a coincidence, a blessing. I mean, that David Ayer would be a Navy veteran, you know? And
I didn't know that. Interesting. So he loved that. Oh, he loves that. Because he knows you already went through basic training. He knows you're tough or you wouldn't have been
there. And it was funny because it was that, you know, I was doing that audition. It wasn't even for Tax Collector. I auditioned for a different show he was working on. He thought I was good and put me in Tax Collector.
Oh, my God. That's another great example for people out there to never say no because you just don't know where they're going to get you from. That's awesome. You were in another film altogether. He just liked you in that. So he says, will you do this film? And you didn't have to audition.
Yeah, no. And the thing is I dropped the act and just talked to him as me. Like, you know, you go into these auditions and you want to show the best of yourself. And when he said he was a Navy veteran, he'd been through stuff that, you know, he was around the Latin culture all his life. All of a sudden it was like, again, it's these choices. It's that one moment of, do I drop all the BS and just show him who I am? Or do I show what I think that they want to see? And so once I just dropped that act, and I was just like, yeah, this is me. I'm a veteran. I'm kind of weird. I don't say the right thing. In fact, I usually mess things up. This is me.
But you're authentic. You're beautiful. You obviously can handle weapons and you do stunts and obviously you can act.
And I think he saw too that I had a lot of pain. Like I had issues. And what I noticed that David does is he chooses people that he can work with, that he knows have been through enough stuff that he can help them harness the pain. And it's like he taught me to see pain differently, to see pain as it's part of life. You know, you are going to lose people. You are going to hurt. It's going to be hard. But at the end of the day, you only have one life. You only have your life. That's the only life you're responsible for. And you can choose to throw it away or you can choose to say, look at all this pain, all of this experience that I have. How can I use it? How can I harness it and project it and turn it into something beautiful? And so we did.
Cheyenne Ray Hernandez, I have hope in the future. Thank goodness. I'm talking to a real live millennial who knows her shit. God bless America. And sorry the baby boomers screwed it all up for you. But this November is a new day, and hopefully things are going to turn around.
Well,
Thank you so much.
Thanks, but you have to take the good with the boomers, too, because, you know, I think the boomers, they taught me how to work my ass off, you know? Like, and it's...
You're generous. You're being very generous.
they did. I mean, like you know, those stories of, like, you know, your parents make it... I mean, well, my grandparents, they made it sound like getting to school was this, like, you have to hike through the Arctic and, you know, all this kind of crazy stuff.
Just, I went to school uphill both ways.
Yeah. And so it's like, it taught me not to really complain, you know, and just do it. But then also it's like, I have an old soul too, I think. So, you know.
You are so interesting. I definitely want you to come on the Hour of Power and tell a true 10-minute story. It'll be early in the morning for you, but I'll put you on later in the hour. So it'll be 7:30 a.m. to you
in
Australia. And I'm going to give you dates for that right away because I really do want you to come on. You definitely have great stories. And thank you so much, Cheyenne. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I think you're awesome.
Thanks. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Cheyenne Ray Hernandez. You can find her over there on Instagram at CheyenneRay_Hernandez. And then, of course, follow me over there as well at StoryWorthy. And don't forget to follow Story Smash over there as well on Instagram at Story Smash. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Cheyenne Ray Hernandez. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.